Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to the second edition of my retro Rahalastapa, looking back in no particular order, in no chronological sense, to some of my old favourites from this vast back catalogue of Rahalastapas that we have got. If you count the Edinburgh ones, there's probably 500 or so episodes. If you're new to the podcast, we want to give you a chance to see some of the absolute hear some of the absolute classic episodes and some of my favourites. People often ask me who my favourite guests are, and it's very difficult to choose one, which is why I'm going to be doing this every single week. But this week's guest is possibly the favourite guest I have ever had on Rahalastapa, for me personally, at least, I think. And there's amazing competition for this role. The most naturally charming and funny person that has been on the show and possibly that I've ever met. It's Bob Mortimer. You know that because it was in the description. So lovely to get him on board. It was a long time ago now. I'm really hoping we can get him back pretty soon. He seems keen to come on, but he's a very busy man. So hopefully there might be a Rahalastapa with Bob later in the year. But what I liked about this one was just the ease of doing it, I suppose, and the lovely moments we found in this. I think the bit that sticks out for me is the realisation that we were probably both in the charming city of Middlesbrough at the same time and managed to work out the route from my grandparents' door to his childhood home. And it's a weird thing to think, isn't it, that... back in the 1970s, 1980s, we may have walked past each other in Middlesbrough city centre or even just Roman Road in Middlesbrough. I know you're going to love this one. I don't think there's much more to say about it other than Bob is absolutely just what you see is what you get. One of the nicest men in the world. I was going to say in show business, but that's not difficult. He's one of the nicest men in the world. I'm in love with him. I hope to have his children one day. And at the very least, I hope to get him back on Rahulastapur very soon. If you enjoy these podcasts, why not tell your friends about them? If this is a great place to start, you can direct them to these Friday released retro episodes to get them in the mood, and then hopefully they will then work their way through the back catalogue themselves. Please feel free to do that. Every listen with the adverts is a little tiny penny more in the pot for us to make more podcasts. Now let's sit back, relax, and enjoy one of the really great Rahulastapurs. Thanks very much to the comedic talents of Mr. Bob Mortimer. Right, are we ready? I'm about to start, George. You need to press play and record. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just walked up 197 steps at the Covent Garden Tube. It's more than you think it's going to be. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello! Hello, London! Thank you. Lovely to be back. Should have killed me last year. I'm back. Welcome to Rich Harry's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some of the cool kids have started calling it recently, Rahulastapur. Oh, Rahulastapur, they call it, the cool people. So it's lovely to be here. Lots of things have happened since I've been officially at the Leicester Square Theatre. I've had a human child has emerged. My wife's vagina is one of the most terrifying, terrifying things I've ever seen. It meant to be the most beautiful day of your life. It is absolutely fucking horrific. If you hate the person you're married to, then have a baby with them, because you will be delighted at the pain. And seeing a human head coming out of your wife, it's not what you imagine it's going to be, Andy. It's not as good as you think. And thank you to everyone who contributed to the Kickstarter campaign that has keeping us going. That means we can film, so thank you. If you were one of those people who contributed, thank you very much. If not, then maybe contribute to the next series, because we'll have to do the same thing again for the next one. But it went well. We hit our target, but Chris Evans, not that one, forgot about VAT, so we actually didn't quite make enough money. That's okay. I just won't. Why, my baby just won't eat. That's all right for this autumn. What was I going to say? So, yes. I don't know if you were on Twitter. There's lots of things happened. I was on Twitter and I noticed Lord Sugar, who I follow on Twitter. If you don't follow him, I do retweet quite a lot of what he says. He got onto Twitter to ask people on Twitter to give him the name for his autobiography. I don't know if you saw, which is pretty cheap as far as I know I've asked you all for money, but that is a different thing. And I came up with some very good names for his autobiography. I thought Firing Blanks would be quite a good... I thought that would be quite a good title. Especially if in the autobiography it was revealed that he was also impotent. Well, that is the... I thought... I quite like convoluted puns, so I thought Aspoo full of sugar. It's like a spoonful of sugar, but Aspoo, which it only really works if he reveals in the autobiography that he is suffering from some kind of rectal diabetes, and then that will... But if he does, that's a very good title for it. But I actually thought the best title for Lord Sugar's autobiography would be "I Remind Me of Me at That Age," which I think he didn't choose any of those. I can't believe he went for unscripted, which I think is quite insulting to all of his many scriptwriters. You seriously think that show isn't scripted? Looks good on paper, but so does fish and chips. That kind of skill. So yeah, I have got a tiny daughter. It's amazing. I'm really loving it. She's beautiful. She's called Phoebe. She's 3.5 months old now. She's just started to laugh at stuff, which is, as a comedian, is absolutely fascinating to see a sense of humour developing. It's kind of weird what she laughs at sometimes. It's hard to... I might try out some of the material on you, because it kills with her, so I don't know if it's going to work. The thing that really made her first laugh, that made me, and she got, the first time she laughed at something that I think she understood, she's teething a bit, so we gave her this kind of powder that you put in your in their mouths with their teeth. They just kind of their gums, and they come chew on it. But she'd never, up to this point, she'd only had cow pollen and milk. So this was the first solid she ever had. She put it in, she went, and then me and my wife laughed, and then she saw us laughing. And she sort of laughed along, but in the way of kind of going, yeah, this is crazy, and it's just so like me, isn't it? That I, what's going on with this? I eat milk. Why am I eating this? So that was quite good fun. And then I really made her laugh the next day by singing Frère Jacques to her, but changed most of the words to ding dong. It really made her laugh. So I thought I'd try that on you and see if it makes you laugh. I don't know what she found amusing. I don't think she understands that dong means penis. I think it was the onomatopoeia that she enjoyed. But you go, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. I can't even do it now. What's that? Fred Jacket. Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. Can you sing? Can you sing? Sing along with daddy, sing along with daddy. Ding dong, ding. Not gone as well. But then she found that funny for about 5 minutes and then never again. I don't think she was laughing at that. Anyway, so that's been very enjoyable. But look, we're going to crack on. Oh, I must, because of the Kickstarter thing, there is now I'm contractually obliged to do lots of things. I would like to thank Duncan Thorley, who has paid for this entire episode for advertising Maximum Whimsy, which is a podcast sitcom about Minecraft. I mean, it sounds terrible, but thanks for the money. Like Minecraft, you know. This is why most people won't sponsor this podcast, I discovered. He did say I could take the business. No, he's a lovely guy, and he's very proud of the end board he designed, which is on episode 3 onwards. Look out for Maximum Whimsy. I do pick it up at the beginning of the show as well, so you can look out for that. And also, I have to say, I did promise some people that I would call people a fucking idiot, basically, is what most of them seem to have gone for. So Adam asked me to say Lawrence Crook is a fucking idiot for chickening out of calling Nima Parvini a fucking idiot. So there we go, that is done. So it's just I'm being paid money to call by proxy someone a fucking idiot. There could be anyone. They could be a really nice person. They could have just died or something. And then the papers would get hold of it. And Richard Herring's called Nima Parvini a fucking idiot. Don't even know who that is. So, look, we're going to crack on. Will you please welcome my very first guest this season? Can't believe we've got him. It just took me tweeting him and asking him if he would come on. he's probably best known as the host of the Radio 4 pilot, Bob Says Who, from about 1992. It was script written by Richard Herring and Stuart Lee. Will you please welcome Bob Mortimer, ladies and gentlemen? Bob Mortimer! Hello. You can sit down here. You can sit down with me if you like. You can sit on the same chair as me. Bob's brought his own lager in with him.
Yes, thank you very much. I have. Thank you for noticing that.
It's good. It's good.
It's 3.4%, which is the healthy cut-off point.
Is it?
If you're interested in that kind of thing.
Is it? Isn't the healthy cut-off point not drinking lager?
No, I don't agree with that.
So do you remember Bob Says Who, the Radio 4 pilot?
You mentioned to me backstage. Yeah. No, I have no memory of it whatsoever.
It was real. It was, you know, it was almost a prototype of Shooting Stars. I created Alan Partridge. You've never seen a penny of that.
I created Alan Partridge.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, you should get some money as well.
Yeah.
I've never seen a penny of that.
And I was a big lad once when I was working on inventing Peter Kay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But I only got as far as the size. I saw him when he was 16, 17.
Yeah.
I was judging So You Think You're Funny in Edinburgh. And he came on doing his, you know, Fanta. Panda Pops. Sorry, I don't mean to be disparaging, but he'd say brand things, wouldn't he?
You can't help but be disparaging, can you? Just by giving his act.
That's not to me. But I remember there were different times because there was like a judging panel went up and I said, well, I thought the big lad, the Panda Pops lad, was the best. I remember the Channel 4 commissioner then said, Yeah, but all he did was tell jokes. do you remember those times? Yeah.
Well, it's sort of a little bit like that now at the moment. He writes, and it's worth reading his autobiography, Peter Kay. It's fascinating because he really writes from point of view of everything I did was amazing. Right. Or, and he never had a bad gig, so he writes about that and says how brilliant he was. But he writes about how when he was at school, he was the Cowardly Lion in Wizard of Oz, and he missed one of the rehearsals because of some family thing, and they said, oh, you're just going to have to sit that dance out because, you didn't go to the rehearsal. And he was annoyed that everyone else was dancing and he wasn't. So he got up and danced up and down the aisle and larked around and ad-libbed a dance. And he goes, everyone was laughing, everyone loved it. Kind of go, I don't think the other people in the Wizard of Oz were enjoying it that much. Peter, but no, he's a lovely guy.
Have you heard the one about him buying his wife the Renault Clio? Second-hand Renault Clio? Well, I don't know. Do we leave it at that?
Yeah. Tell me later. I think we can fill in the gaps. I very much enjoyed his car share.
He didn't insure it.
He didn't.
So she couldn't give it a go on her actual birthday.
I bet you found it hilarious, though, when that happened. So, Bob says who?
Insurance? What's that about? I remember that.
It's good to be able to remember things. I can remember things, but no one else can. I can remember Bob says who, and you can't remember it. So that's why I'm fucked as an observational comedian.
Yes, I did not remember it. I'm not laughing. I don't... Had you made me remember it, I'd have found it hilarious. Yeah.
The only question I remember was Jason Donovan said there are too many broken hearts in the world, but how many too many are there? That was one of the questions that you had to ask Sonia.
It didn't fly.
For some reason it didn't. Caroline Leddy was the producer of it, who went on to be a big wig at Channel 4. Stuart Lee and Richard wrote it. Bob Mortimer posted it. Sonia was in it. I can't remember who else was. Do you remember Sonia? She did the Eurovision Song Contest. Sonia.
Little power pack. Her energy like defied her size. There.
It was. Yeah, yeah.
Sonita just goes on and on. You know, like forever.
Yeah. So you are from Middlesbrough.
Do you remember Sonita?
Simon Cowell does. So it's. You were born in Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
You were born in Acklam in Middlesbrough.
I was born in Linthorpe in Middlesbrough.
Linthorpe.
In my mum's house.
My grandparents lived like a quarter of a mile from where you were born.
You kidding? My house.
In Clepstone Avenue.
Clepstone.
If you come out of Tollesbury Road, turn left into Harrow Road.
I know Harrow Road.
Yeah, then right into Roman Road.
Yes.
And then left into Emerson Avenue. Actually, it's the other way around. Then right into Tollesbury. So it's... You from your house, you'd come out. Turn left.
I've got to turn right into Emerson.
Left into Roman Road, right into Harrow Road, and then it's Clepstone Avenue. They were then number 11 Clepstone Avenue.
But and do you know who else was lives on that street?
No,
Chris Rea. You know the gravel boy. No, I promise you.
On Clepstone Avenue on your road.
Yeah. He lived on Clapstone.
Did he?
Yeah. If it's the first right after
everything. My mum and dad once saw you walking along on Roman Road or Harrow Road. They can't remember if it was a few years ago.
Yeah. Roman Road. Roman Road is very straight, as you can imagine.
Yeah. So that's good. So all my family from Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough is
one
of the...
You're kidding me, aren't
you? I'm not. All my family, my grandparents, both sets of grandparents, my parents met in Middlesbrough. My dad was... we were trying to work out if you went to the same school, but I don't think you did go to the same... I mean, my dad's a little bit older than you.
Is he Catholic?
No.
Well, we might have then. Yeah. There was quite a split in them days.
Yeah. And you support Middlesbrough?
Yeah.
And as they do. Did you ever go to Rosebery Topping?
Of course I went to Rosebery Topping. Are your grandparents still alive?
No, they're all dead. Oh, thanks for bringing that up. They had a good knock. They'd be pretty old now. My grandma, my last one died a couple of years ago. She was 102.
Wow.
She had a good knock. Which for Middlesbrough is amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing.
Middlesbrough is one of the most horrible places. I can say this.
Yeah,
it's one of the really most depressing and horrible cities in the world. Yeah, I've ever been to. Rosebery Topping is delightful.
Yeah, I mean, it has a kind of beauty because like, when I was young, the coastline was 8 miles of chemical and steelworks, yeah. Which did have a certain beauty. But yeah, it's not picture postcard type thing.
Because I spent a lot of time, you know, I wasn't born there, but I think my sister was born there. But we'd moved, and I was in Somerset by the time I can really remember. So we would drive up every summer and see the grandparents. So I spent a lot of time in Middlesbrough.
And do you remember the lights from the works and everything?
I remember it being. My granddad worked in the park when in the Captain Cook Museum. Did you ever go to that?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be mainly just. I bought Football Manager 1982, one of the first Football Manager cassettes for my computer in Middlesbrough Townsend, W. H. Smith's.
Wow. Do you remember Dovecot Sales Rooms?
No.
Oh, that's a shithole, Richard. But people remember it fondly. Yeah. Yeah, sort of, how did they get away with that?
I did come across a newspaper article about you choosing your 7 favourite places in Middlesbrough in a local paper, and one of the comments is, he loves it so much he does anything but live here. Oh, yeah. Which is just typical of Middlesbrough, I think. Yeah, he moved away as soon as he could. Yeah, he fucking did, and so would you have done it. But it's lovely. We can say this because we love Middlesbrough. Were you a bin man in Middlesbrough?
I was a bin man, yeah. I did Grove Hill Estate and Sutton Estate. And it was in the days of cast iron bins then.
Right.
So it was very much a man's job. I was very much admired. You know, like on that Eric Cantona advert?
Yeah.
Are you a bin man? Do you know?
Sounds good though. My granddad did so many different jobs, and now suddenly I think, was he a bin man? You might have worked. Did you ever meet Don Hannon?
Don Hannon.
No, Don. You remember?
No,
Don
he was
Hannon.
In Miami Vice. He's not considered.
Don Hannon. Good. I look a bit like him. His hair was grey, unlike mine. Well, that's because he was old, I suppose. He wasn't grey his whole life. Anyway, that's the Middlesbrough-based stuff. But do you think there is a... the North East has brought a lot of very esoteric and, you know, Viz and you and Vic have created this kind of very different kind of comedy to Southerners, I suppose. And people like me are Oxford-educated idiots like me.
Yeah.
Do you think there's something in the North East that's inherently amusing?
I don't think so, Richard. Maybe. I mean, I like... Whenever I go back up there, I get in tune with their humour very quickly.
Yeah.
Do you know many Middlesbrough people?
No, they're all dead now.
All the original. They're like the tomorrow people. I think there might be something in it. Like, we haven't got that, like, loud, brash, scousy sort of thing going on.
No.
Or the one where you leave stage and people say, hey, he's pretty clever, that guy. He's made me laugh, but we haven't got that thing. I don't know.
Freya lived on Pepstone Avenue?
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
I used to play with him down the road. He's a bit older than me, isn't he?
He's 2 years older than me, because he's Catholic. He went to St. Patrick's.
Right.
The whole Rhea family did. They're very successful family, I can see they're nice houses, Clepston.
All right. Yeah. I mean, from Middlesbrough, they're
they're not bad. Yeah, they've got upstairs and everything.
my poorer grandparents lived in Benson Avenue, which is
Benson. That sounds like it's in town.
Yeah, sort of nearer to town.
Near to
and I went back. I drove. I went back there because it had been a long time since I'd really been there because they mostly died a while ago. But all of it seems like the Benson Street was when I went back in my mind because I was a kid. It's like big house with these tiny little terrace.
Yeah,
right. One down, two up, kind of.
Yeah, house. I mean, my mate's trying to flog one now from up there. It's $42,000. You know, it's incredible, isn't it?
That is incredible.
Do you want it?
Yeah, I might buy it. I can buy that with the. Yeah. Oh, we're moving house. But you used to be a solicitor. I was going to ask you if you could help me. We're moving house because it's really expensive. Can you fill in the forms and stuff?
I probably could.
Could you?
To be honest with you, but you wouldn't necessarily own the house after I've done it. if that bothers you. You know, I remember I bought one. I bought one in East Dulwich for some sort of lovely couple. Had all the right ideas about life. You know, nice people. And I bought them it, and I forgot to get them to sign the mortgage deed. Just not, like, and but which means they could have the house for free. It's a settled land act, 1925. It has to be written on. So I got my mate Kingy, who did an act for us, which is Dr. King and his Flying Rabbits. And I put a fucking... It was a Leeds Permanent Building Society mortgage. So me and Kingy thought, you'll need a trilby. Because if it's Leeds Permanent... So he went round with it, right? He went round with the mortgage deed and did it as a, like, hello. We just wondered if you're happy with the service and if you could just sign this document. And they signed it, but I can remember because I was a lawyer, it's a very, like, sheltered thing. You can't think that there's anything else you could do. And I would have been struck off.
Right.
God, it was a frightening day. No, it really was. I didn't masturbate at anything and I was young.
Can you get into trouble retrospectively for this? Can you be sent to prison now?
No, I don't. I wonder.
Yeah. I wonder how you find out. It'd be annoying for that, for the couple, when they discovered they could have had a free house.
Could have had it for free, yeah. Mind you, they'll be sitting on a fortune now, won't they? They'll be living it up.
But the problem is, you buy a house in London, and then I'm trying to sell my house in London, but then you have to buy somewhere else for the money.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean anything. Just everything's more expensive, unless you go and live in Middlesbrough.
Middlesbrough, yeah.
I could buy the whole of Benson Street. I mean, I might do that. I could buy the whole of Benson Street and raise it to the ground. Just drive through in a digger and knock it all down.
If you could find someone called Hedges to buy it and call it Tobacco Road.
So it's kind of fascinating to me that you, when you met Vic Reeves, Jim Moyer, you were kind of in the audience of his show, and you kind of, that's how you got together with him.
Yeah, I mean, we can't really remember it very well, but I mean, you say it was a show. It was a room above a pub in Deptford, and it was him and one table of his mates.
Yeah.
And Jim's a bit of a show off, and he was just doing his thing for his mates.
Right.
And actually, Dr. King with Flying Rabbits, he was a mutual friend who took me to this. So I sat on the table of friends.
Yeah.
And I have no memory of how I got involved in it, because everyone was involved in it. I think I went up and gave him a cheque for his work he'd done for really, really hungry kids or something. that kind of thing. And, yeah, because, I mean, he's not an easy chap to meet.
No.
Jim, he's very shy. And of course he suffers from that thing that if you're on the telly you're not allowed to be shy because it's interpreted as being really rude.
Yeah.
So, and he's very shy. I didn't get to know him for a while. Yeah. He'd sort of say, I can remember, he's, would you come on and give us a check? Do you know, and you know, I can't really remember the first time I went up there but we started writing it in his kitchen maybe 4 or 5 weeks after I'd seen him that first time, because we did a different show every week.
Yeah. That's sort of interesting because that's so different than the rest of the comedy scene. So this was like the late 80s, early 90s.
It was about 88, like that, yeah.
So, I mean, the rest of the comedy scene, me and Stu moved to London in 89, 90, and we started doing stand-up. But you would go to clubs and you'd do the same thing at every club until you got more gigs. And you were completely doing your own thing.
Yeah.
Sort of separate, and then by sort of chance and happenstance, that sort of...
Well, it was the same audience every week, but like growing. But you couldn't, so you couldn't. You had to do something new for them every week.
Well, you're saying that, Bob. You wait till we get onto the emergency questions.
See, are you just hoping the next guest was from Middlesbrough as well?
The next guest is very similar to you in a lot of ways, but she isn't. I don't think she's from Middlesbrough. I actually don't know where she's from. Probably I might ask her. No, I've done a radio show with her for a long time. It's been a lot of fun researching this because I've been going back and watching lots of Reeves and Mortimer from various eras. And as I was saying backstage, I mean, it's kind of so, it's so much its own thing, and it's so different than other stuff, and it's so stupid, a lot of it, but there's a lot of, so you're just laughing at the ridiculousness of it, the absurdity of it. There's a lot of, what I really like was someone sent me a link to the Stars in Their Eyes sketch you did, which has lots of funny stuff in it, but the thing that really made me laugh was that the door that they came through in Stars in Their Eyes was too low, so everyone had to come, and it's not, and you don't make a big thing of it, it's just like the door that Stars in Their Eyes door is just, everyone has to bend down to get through it. And it's one of the funny, it just was making me laugh so much. And it's such a subtle throwaway little joke in there. So there's sort of so much depth and thought that I think's gone into it.
Yeah, look, we did used to really write those things. So, yeah. Like, we would... You've done yourself, Richard, were like, in those shows that you really care about. So we would take every instruction. So it comes to a door and not leave it there. Think, well, what about the... Do you know what yeah. I mean? And say, well, let's make it too small. And then try and do every little detail. I mean, we even put... I don't know if you remember that one, but if you noticed that Matthew Kelly had a set of gallows on his head. And we I don't know whether like that was a portent or something. But yeah, we're just, you know, like, we're just looking. Do you remember those youthful days when you really gave a shit and you thought, so I thought, you know, what would, you know, something about him having gallows on his head seem right for that character?
It's sort of interesting because I think absurd, that kind of absurdness or surreal, I don't think it's really surreal humour, but it's sort of absurd humour. It's everyone goes, well, it sort of looks like it's easy because it's just saying some things that don't link together, but actually to get it right, I was listening to you talk, you and Vic, being you interviewing Vic in that Radio 4 show where the chain reaction thing, and he said you were wearing Speedos and an old bus conductor's ticket machine and nothing else. And that is just like such, but that's such two brilliant things. It just conjures up such an amazing image. But like, why would you think of a bus conductor's ticket machine? And that? So it's very hard to be absurd because your brain follows patterns, so it's actually deliberately, and it feels very ad-libbed a lot of those things where you are just messing around.
Yeah. I mean, they're not. We, it's like with people, you know, like especially with the big night out. That was like every little pretend laughing at each other or forgetting our lines was all very rehearsed, really. Because I think when you're being so indulgent as to do stuff that just makes you laugh, and you never had that thought, will anyone else laugh? You know, you've got to present it with a certain lightness that people might say, I quite like these fellas. You know, they seem all right. They're having a bash. Yeah. And get a bit of sympathy rather than, like... you know, rather than get them straight down that line, which is so easy with us to say, sort of like, who do you think you are? And I don't like these two fellas.
Yeah, I think that you are likeable, because it's got this homemade feel about it, but then there's a real craft beneath it when you... So that's the trick is to make it look... like bumbling and insane, and then you suddenly look at it and go, oh my god, there's a lot of work's gone into this.
Yeah.
And it's really, really hard. I just think it's that you do see acting, you see stand ups who try to be surreal, and it just often it's boring. I mean, I say to you, sometimes if you're in the wrong mood as a viewer, your stuff is really irritating and makes you quite angry. That's just times, and it's going on for ages. Going, yeah, oh fuck off. And then you can then the next day go and watch the same thing and go, this is just amazing. I mean, I remember watching The Big Night Out and just being completely blown away by, because it was so different than.
Yeah, but you're right. It's irritating as well. If you're in the wrong mood or it's not your bag, you know. Like we, I don't know. It's I always found it very like funny. So. We went along with it, and no one stopped us yet. So,
well, that's—I mean, there is the thing. You really have such an amazing body. It's one of those things. I think, oh, you know, there's reason more than this and this. But actually, when you look at the body of work that you've created and the consistency where both of you have worked together and apart, it's like it's a massive body of work for 25 years with really no respite. And some things have become much more famous than others, and some things. But for something like Catterick, I think, which most a lot of people wouldn't remember or didn't see. It was a completely different thing again. It was an amazing.
I mean, that's a favourite of ours, Catterick. We always like to Catterick and a series we did called Bang Bang, and funnily enough, a Saturday night thing we did for BBC One that was called Families at War.
Yeah,
so that we always they're the three that we.
Yeah. What so? What was Families? Was Families at War like a game show with a sort of generation game?
Yeah, it was. We'd get two families, and we would think of a. Like a skill that they might have, which we thought was funny, like that I can't hardly remember them. That like that they could change light bulbs in one jump, and then we'd get the family and we'd say, "Are you willing to pretend to the British public that you can change light bulbs?" And you know, I mean, that's the way telly is, that is. And we'd get families who were willing to come up and say, "Yes, I can." I think it was one woman said that she could iron on moving surfaces. that was the challenge we gave her. Look, Mrs. Whoever, Mrs. Peacock, are you willing to say that you can iron on a moving circus. And to get on telly, they say, yeah, yeah, right, yeah. Of course I will. So we had a motorised dining board. And yes, it was Saturday night thing. And then the family that won went into something called the Cubiscus, where they were dressed as a spider and they had to pick gifts out of this cage. Whilst Jim, for some reason, I think because he wasn't involved in this bit. It's always a delight for me because I have nothing to do with these things. We did a thing called Catrick. And if anyone remembers it, he looks exactly like Peter Sutcliffe. And there was never any suggestion, any script or any meeting where he looked like Peter Sutcliffe. And on the first day of filming, he fucking emerged. And says, what do you think of this thing? And then, in the moment, you go for it. And then you're committed because it's on tape. And then you go, fucking hell, it's been so long. But like, so when I would be the spider, which the family manipulated to pick up hoovers and shit. And Jim took it upon himself to stand by this cage, shouting, "I am the cockroach." But. I mean, I think we were really fond of it because that was on at 6 o'clock on Saturday night, and yeah. We
actually won. What a shame, because that's such a perfect night thing. And I'm sure Shooting Stars obviously proves that you can make that work to a mass audience, but that's Saturday night TV, I mean, it's become so kind of boring and anodyne, hasn't it, in comparison to that, but that's sort of the perfect...
It was really good format, it was a good show.
I mean, it's better than Noel Edmonds, but even Noel Edmonds, that was sort of a bit anarchic and stupid, you know, there was something, you know, he had a lot of paedophiles, as it turned out. did lots of gotchas on them, I would say, you know, maybe you should have got them for the actual crimes they committed. But... And you never killed anyone, right, when you did Families at War? So
I've never killed anyone on screen. I'm not that tough.
People disappointed. People are disapproving. Oh, they never... Not like Noel, our hero, Noel Edmonds.
Would you ever get a killer on? I'd be fascinated.
Onto this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if they'd served their time. Or if they hadn't yet...
Exactly, that's right.
Or if they hadn't yet been caught. I might have done it. I might very well have done it. That's
good.
The kind of thing a killer would ask me, in fact. Did you ever get a serial killer who'd never been caught onto your show? Just out of interest. Whose friend dressed up as Peter Sutcliffe. So you fought Les Dennis.
In
a boxing match.
Yeah.
And you beat him.
According to the judges, I beat him. I felt I beat him as well. I thought it was a lot fitter, a lot quicker, a quicker hands, used the ring better. But I also fought Darren Day.
Did you?
Yeah, because Darren Day, this was something called celebrity boxing that I did, and Darren Day said he'd do it, but he said, I just want to warn you that I'm kickboxing champion, like ninja type, so just be a bit careful. So they do get, the BBC get worried about these things. Well, so I said, well, I'll fight him. No, I'm not a tough guy. I just thought, well, you know, that's the only way we'll find out. And I had a fight with him, and he was just like lemon curd or something. He was just, I'd hesitate to say a lady, but anyway. But also we had a problem. We did one with Ricky Gervais fighting Grant Bovey.
Yeah.
And we were training Ricky Gervais, and he said he didn't need to train, he was just going to kick his head in. So they were going to stop the fight, because they just were, you know, because there was a lot of concern. They pulled it in the end because of concerns about people getting hurt and so on.
Yes, for so it's quite a dangerous show.
So we asked it, it came to a point with the trainer that's now turned into a lady, Frank Maloney.
Oh, yeah.
Franklin is his brother. Said, "Well, we're going to pull it," but I said, "Well, what if I fight him to see if he can cope with, you know, just whether he can cope with it?" So I had a fight with Ricky Gervais in a gym above the old Kent Road, and I did fucking laugh because I was smoking and I'm not fit, so I wore a t-shirt. But Ricky, you've taken it by seat. He came out topless. Oh, fuck, he was big. Fucking hell. Do you remember him for the shit? And he kicked seven shades out of me. Oh, he really did. I've got that on film and it's, he won't let us show it, though. It's funny, though. But anyway.
So he basically made some underground fight club stuff with this weird mixture of sort of slightly cool and really weird celebrities fighting each other. Got to bring that back. That sounds... Got to get that on.
Yeah,
we do it on the internet now. The BBC can't stop you.
They just can't touch me, can they?
Yeah.
It all gets a bit creepy, though. That was it was the government that stopped us.
Yeah,
you know, the Houses of Parliament. They're all the fight British Parliament.
After all, they did as well, eh? The Houses of Parliament.
It's a good point.
It is. It's a good point. Here's a new emergency question based on what we were talking about earlier. What do you think Lord Alan Sugar should call his autobiography? I came up with Aspoonful of Sugar.
Aspoonful? Oh, Spoonful of Sugar.
Yeah, it's a slow burner. He didn't choose it.
He
asked the public to come up with a title for his autobiography, which is lazy at best. And stupid at best as well.
Shit, there's nothing... There's sugar on your tits? Excuse me? Is that sugar on your tits, Alan? I wouldn't want you meeting Pelle if that is sugar on your tits.
Sugar tits is quite just speaking of sugar tits.
Do you like Alan Sugar?
I do have a sort of grudging respect for him, but I think he's ludicrous.
Yeah.
But on Twitter, I retweet every time he writes anything about Tottenham. So he either goes on Twitter and says, "Who knows what the Tottenham score is?" Which is A, stupid because he's on the internet, so he should be able to find out quite easily. And B, he's got like thousands of followers, so all he's going to get is 1,000 people telling him the Stutt score. Yeah. Then he'll also go on Twitter and tell you what's happening if he's watching the Tottenham game.
Yeah.
He will commentate on it for you. As if you can't find out that information anywhere else. So I like to imagine that I'm providing a service where only Alan Sugar knows what's happening in the Tottenham game, and I retweet that for people who aren't following Alan Sugar. So I find it's quite an esoteric, long-running joke on Twitter.
He's a talking walnut, isn't he? And he's got to be given credit for that.
Well, he takes himself very seriously, and he's a bit of a joke. So he's kind of an interesting... I mean, like, he's not really done anything... that's been massively successful. You get the Amstrad emailing phone. My sister bought one of those. I did say the...
The Amstrad...
He's like, he had an Amstrad phone that you could email from the phone. I don't know if you saw this.
That, like.
Well, it was like sort of about this size. So it was a phone, but then you could also... There's a little screen and a keypad, I believe, if I'm describing it correctly, but a very small keypad. So you could... If you didn't have a computer and wanted to email people, you could email people from your phone. It didn't take off because people...
So you kind of got, look, actually, I won't say this next bit. Hold on. What do you reckon?
I don't think I even thought that far. That would be quite good. I'm just a bit bored of talking to you. You're still there. Yeah, I'm waiting for the email to come through. Okay, just hang on. It's hard to type on this tiny keyboard. It'll take me a little while to do it. Okay, well, that's good. That was a good title. I'll send it in. He's chosen Unscripted as his title, which I think is a bad title.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you had to choose between dating a six-foot, a man who was a six-foot-tall penis...
Yes.
So it was just a, basically a penis with a face on it. Or a man who, instead of a...
Is the face on the bell end or just on the shaft?
I think... It's on the bell end. It's on the
bell end. So the bell end's not his hairstyle.
Well, it sort of could be. It could be. His face is there. I imagine his face is on the non-banjo string side.
Right. Oh, the banjo string
could be like... The banjo string? Well, the banjo string could be like a little pigtail. And his face is there. So bottom line, it's just a massive penis.
Okay.
Or a normal man, except instead of a penis, he has a tiny man.
Fully functioning tiny man.
Yeah, just a tiny man who's in place of his penis, who's a separate entity.
Forgive me for asking, but can you tell me anything about the personality of the little man? I'm just saying, is he, like, grumpy or...?
I think he would be a bit grumpy, because he's... You know, constantly in another man's pants, slightly rolled up. And if he is,
that would be his biography, wouldn't it? In another man's pants. Another year.
And he's presumably like rolled when the man's wearing trousers. He's just sort of crunched up inside the trousers. And even when he's hanging free, I'm presuming he's hanging upside down.
Yeah.
When the man's just walking around with nothing on, so I think the tiny man's pretty pissed off.
Yeah.
But but probably would be delighted about the company. It would be like going out with two people, because you'd have the man and the tiny man.
I'm
going
to choose that.
Yeah.
Richard, very much so, because you couldn't go out and about with the penis character, could you, really?
That's very judgmental of you.
Well, no, it would just seem like a promotional thing, like you were saying. selling penis friends. I don't know.
Good, well, that's good to know. It's a long time since I've done the emergency question, so I'm just trying to look at. I'll do a traditional.
Does
one.
Does that mean I've done bad if you've got on to emergency?
No, it
questions.
Doesn't. I just people will be upset if I don't ask. What would it take for you to fillate the actor Keith Allen?
Keith, well, fuck off. Have you had dealings with him?
Yeah.
Well, let's just leave it at that. Do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
Honestly. Oh, but ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, honestly, really, he's one of these odd people who, in a social situation, gets his cock out.
He is.
And for me, that there's nothing that.
What's is it? has he got anything to be proud of? Is it because he's got quite a big cock that he does?
Well, no, and that is the weird thing.
Yeah.
As Keith Allen put, is in your drink.
No.
Honestly, you're a thirsty man. Oh, but it's terrible, isn't that? The oddest thing.
It is odd, yeah. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No, I've never seen a ghost.
No.
I think I was in the presence of an old fat mate once who was dead.
Right.
Yeah. Still fat, standing above me. But that's a ghost, isn't it, really?
That is a ghost.
Fuck yeah.
If they're dead and they're there. And they're interacting with that's a ghost.
Yeah. I don't remember it very, very well. And he's called Fat Harry.
Right.
Fat Harry Harriman. And, I'm going to change my answer if that's illegal.
It's allowed. You're allowed to change halfway through. It makes me suspicious that you've just made that up.
No, honestly.
Okay.
In Middlesbrough, it was again.
In Middlesbrough?
Yeah.
Because there was a ghost in my grandparents' bedroom but I think it was just my brother. There was like a little, it's called a Z bed or something. There was a little stowaway bed that he used to sleep on when I slept in the other bed when we were in there. And I think it had a little thing that you could twirl around, but he always said there was a ghost. So it might have been a real ghost.
So this is just a Velcro strap or something?
It was like a little metal thing that you could turn around. It was in Middlesbrough. It's full of dead people and very miserable dead people who lived and then died.
So people selling Z beds now, there'll be a little strap on it and say, this guy's got the Middlesbrough ghost, of course.
It could be. I won't ask you the Lou Sanders questions. Let me have a look at my questions. See, that's what emergency questions are to stop me doing this. Are you ever mistaken for Bob Mortimer, the Christian evangelist who lives in Gig Harbour, Washington, who's a triple amputee and motivational speaker?
Well, I can only be honest.
Never had an email through for him. I wish I had him on. I have to go see Sounds. I might try and get him on next.
I've heard he's often mistaken for me, though.
Imagine people thought, we've got Bob Mortimer.
Where's Vic, mate?
He's still got one limb. I'm not sure which limb it is. I don't know. I can't remember which one it is.
If he's evangelical, it's probably the arm.
Probably it is. He was a drug addict and he was in... Are you ever mistaken for Bob Mortimer, the English footballer from 1908 to 1965, who was York City's top scorer in the 1938-9 season?
No. I've occasionally, I've genuinely been mistaken for the actor Kevin Spacey.
Have you?
Really, yeah. I've had conversations with... I've had an autograph returned because I'm not him. And I've sat in the waiting room at Waterloo East with someone thanking me for all my good work at the Old Vic.
Right. And you thought they meant the Old Vic. And he's not that old.
No, that could have happened, couldn't it? You're still with Vic? No, I wouldn't. Yeah. I don't go to the theatre. Fuck it. No, I mean, fuck it. I went to see a play once at the Old Vic. I don't know what it's about.
Yeah, well, like
the experience.
But if you see a good play, it's good. But there's a lot of really bad ones. I did one last year. apparently, wasn't any good.
Who said it wasn't any good?
Well, the public their refusal to come and watch it. I suppose they didn't know, they didn't come and see it. So
exactly,
they
might
have been good, and they just didn't know about it.
What was it called?
I Killed Rasputin.
Was it good?
Oh, it was alright.
Yeah.
It was alright.
It's not really a big sell, Richard, but alright.
It's never going to happen again. I was quite pleased with it, but you know. I only lost £45,000 putting on it. It's not a big deal. So, could have bought a house in Middlesbrough for that. You are right, yes. Yes. So I'd rather have done the play.
What were you thinking of, Richard? See, you're £45,000, I'll do that. I'll put that towards that project.
Yeah.
Nothing cautioned you, no.
I thought it didn't lose all the, you know, I put more than £45,000. I thought more people would come because I thought that it was Edinburgh. I thought 100 people a day would definitely come, so that was one thing. And then I was doing a stand-up show at the same time, and I thought that usually makes money now, so that'll make some money. But I didn't make any money either. So let's not bring it. I'm going to cry. But it's all right. I've been on tour. The tour did all right. It's fine. Yeah. There's a website called Dirty Brit Com Confession. Are you aware of this?
I know nothing of it.
No, where comedy fans give their sexual fantasies about comedians. There's quite
a few. For real, Richard.
Is this for real? This is there's quite a lot for you. They're mainly about having threesomes with you and Vic. This is the most interesting one. I'm seeing whether you'd be interested in this. I mean, it's hard to do because it's a past version of yourself. I want to take the big night out era, Vic and Bob, chain them together by their nipples, put them in a room, and watch. It's a short chain.
It's a short chain?
Yeah, there's chaining your nipples together. So you'd be quite face-to-face with Vic.
Well, it doesn't do it for me, that what?
Well, I don't know if that would put him off. I don't know if you would have to be in it, or if just the two of you standing there going, this is a bit weird.
Yeah.
I'm not really enjoying this. I don't know if they would be there furiously masturbating or whether you would have to be like going, I like being chained by the nipples to you. It's kind of an odd thing.
It's not doing it for me.
No.
It's not doing it for me. If someone had said, I'm more than willing to, if anyone would like me to run on the shoreline in a massive pair of underpants shouting Gandhi. Got a bit of poetry there, isn't it? Did that come up?
That isn't there yet, but it might be there. I think they might have closed it to entries for the moment, but do go and put that up and then that might come true. Shooting Stars, of course. I wanted to ask you about Will Self on Shooting Stars, because Will Self has been saying that he was really funny on Shooting Stars and you would always cut out all of his jokes in the edit. Is that...
I wouldn't think it was true.
My feeling is...
I don't know.
Do you edit the show? Do you edit those shows or do you just do them and walk away?
Well, we used to do about... We sometimes brought them in like about 34 minutes, which is tight. Really cool. But we used to do them like between about 40 and 50 minutes.
Right.
So there's not a great deal taken out of it. But I don't remember Will. Is that what he said?
He was saying recently that he was annoyed that he said he was very funny on it, but you took out all of his... He seemed to not enjoy being the team captain as so much.
Well, it seemed fun at the time. That's a shame. It did seem... I'm not aware of that.
Okay.
I'm not...
Do you still see Will Self forever?
No. But I never did. I'm not as frightening Will. Will's, he's bright as a button, and massive. My memories of him... I'm sure he was probably edited the same way that Mark Lamar was.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
It was always an interesting mix of... Again, it's just a really clever mix of different types of people. So it's kind of... The idea of having Will Self on that show in itself is a masterpiece idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he's not the kind of person you'd expect.
I mean, it's not terribly thought through. When we did the Big Night Out as a pub thing, the second half of it was a quiz, which was called the Big Quiz. And we had all these like questions left over. We'd never used the Big Quiz on telly. And I'm trying to think. Why did I start? We did the show. We did a night on BBC where they said, "Will you do the whole New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve or something?"
Yeah.
And we didn't have anything particularly to do, so we said, "Well, we'll do a quiz." And it, just the very day we said that, we did a show called The Word, and Mark Lamar said, "Oh, I'm getting sacked from this tomorrow." And we said, "Well, we're doing a quiz." Like next week. It was the same with Ulrika. She did quite something that's quite popular on YouTube, where she started laughing her head off during the weather.
Yeah.
And she got the giggles, and that like happened that week. And we thought, well, she seems fun, and we got in. there wasn't any science behind that. I can't remember why we chose Will. Can't remember.
I suppose it seems like if you've got Mark Lamar and Mark Lamar's not there, it seems like a kind of Mark Lamar like.
That's
presence.
Probably the process we went through. Yeah. Who's like Mark? Yeah.
Yeah. And Mark wasn't doing it because he was doing Buzzcocks. That was the reason he did.
I can't remember why Mark popped in. Do you know Mark?
A little bit, but only from years ago again, yeah.
I mean, that's Mark, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't do it like... Yeah, I can't remember it, but I imagine one week he said, that's it, I'm not doing it anymore, so... Which is a shame.
It's an amazing show, and I think it's... I was looking at a clip with Frank Boff, where Frank Boff... You called him Frank Boff, B-O-double-F on his...
Yeah.
And then he really gets upset about it. He doesn't get that it's a joke, I think. Do you remember this bit?
I can't remember it.
He's going, well, you boys are very clever and I thought this show would be good, but I should tell you my name is spelled B-O-U-G-H, not... you've misspelled my name. It's Boff.
I remember we had a difficult show. Chris Rea was on.
Right.
Why is it funny? Chris Rea was on.
And
Ulrika was the team captain. And Chris Rea just sat like that, saying nothing for the whole show. And when we finished, I said, because I knew Chris Rea a bit. I said, what's the matter, Chris? You've got a cob on, haven't you? And we had no idea that he'd returned from some tour or something. And Ulrika had spread the rumour that had got into the papers that he'd got AIDS. because they lived in the same village. And he had no idea that, you know, Chris being that he's not a telly, he had no idea that this Ulrika woman was on this show.
Did he have AIDS? Why did she say he had AIDS?
It turned out he had pancreatic cancer. I don't know how well you know that disease, that particular cancer, ladies and gentlemen, but it does lead to terrible weight loss. Because the only way you can process stuff is by super exercise.
Right.
Super exercise. With fire pony. I mean, it was the best thing for us with Shooting Stars, was meeting these people, because the guests were just a wish list. It was a, oh, I'd love to meet him.
And did everyone go along? Because, I mean, again, it's these surreal endings where bears are being sent down zip-wise into people's faces, or, what, you know, they all go, they know what was going to happen, and they all go along with it.
No, we never told them what the end game would be, because lots of them wouldn't have done it. But, like, there was no way... We had Rich Lee Grant on. There was no way he would have done the punishment. But you'll know from telly, if you come to Crunch and we tell Ulrika, say, choose Richard.
Yeah.
So, choose Richard E. Grant. So I'm going to choose Richard. And his face was like, you fucking... But in front of an audience, you can't say no. So you've got them. So there was quite a few reluctant... players.
Yeah.
But
I don't think it ever felt like, it always felt like an inclusive thing. It didn't feel like you could do something like that. And some TV shows do things like that and you feel these are people being bullied or people made to look stupid. To me, it always felt like it was an inclusive thing.
Yeah, I don't know. People say, people would come back and ask to do it again and things. But it's weird what telly does to you in that sense, because there was a dancer off Strictly Come Dancing.
Right.
And me and Jim, just being little kids. But we didn't like him. He's maybe called Brendan or...
Yeah,
he's Australian, I think, or something.
There is one called Brendan. So,
and we just, you know, stupidly took that, like we didn't think he... didn't like him. And we had a game where... we do it a lot in what we do. You pick up something like a steel bar and it's real.
Yeah.
But you drop it and pick up the one next to it, which isn't. And we were dropping holy damn cheeses on him. And we had the false ones. And for some reason on that, oh, fuck it. Fuck this. Fuck this Brendan man. From that fucking dancing show. And Edam has got a bit of heft to it, you know. Because he's fucking Brendan from that, he took him.
Yeah,
which was almost sweeter. And we laid a massive turkey on someone that had gone completely rank in hanging out. I can't remember who that was, but people were fine with it. Generally speaking,
apart from when you decided to take vengeance on
there was just that one
cheese-based vengeance.
That fucking Brendan. He might not be called Brendan. Do you know the one I mean?
Yeah. Brendan Cole. Yeah.
Brendan Cole. He turned out he's really nice as well. Really nice.
Oh, I've got to ask. I've got a new thing called Cash for Questions, where someone's given me some cash to ask you a question. This is Nick Gage has paid £60 to ask you. He's paid I'm trying to work out what it is about.
Why are you running here, Richard?
He's paid about a quarter of George's wages for George. Right. George, the sound guy, can't turn the sound on properly. So we might discount that from his. It's just because we wanted to film it this time and we couldn't afford to film it, so we made people pay for things. You know, it's changed the whole tone.
Well,
of the
I was burgled last week or week before, and on the net. Have you seen these wireless cameras you can get that connect to your phone?
Yeah.
And I don't want to put him out of a job or whatever, but it's HD quality.
Yeah.
And you could just put it there, like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think you'd notice the difference.
No.
I don't think so. What they do now for an ID parade is because the wife came downstairs and the burglar was in the living room.
Oh, no.
And he ran away. And she said, I know what he looks like. And like in my days when I was a solicitor, it was just you get 10 people, they've got to be the same colour, but you get just 10 blokes. Can you pick them out? But now they go to like this video suite where you get, so there was 8, I think it was, and they have to be the same age, same hairstyle,
right,
and so on. And it's impossible. Quite, absolutely impossible. And my wife was so frustrated because he's burgled us so many times. Because our security is shit. And but do you know the thing, which when you, like, people look so different on video. I met Pat Cash the other day. I had no idea it was Pat Cash.
Yeah.
Absolutely no idea, because I'd only seen Pat Cash on video, on telly.
Yeah.
Very different in the real life, Pat Cash.
Did Pat Cash burgle you?
Sorry.
You're saying Pat Cash was the burglar, he burgled
you. Well, but it just seems the strangest system. Yeah. We're going to show you him, but he won't look like him because he's on video.
Yeah. Yeah, it's,
anyway, just, I'm not wanting to like crush down on civil liberties or anything like that.
No. Anyway, this is the question. Nick Gage has asked this question. It's quite a hard question to answer, so don't feel you have to. It's not. You know.
He wants 60 quids worth of answers.
He does. As a former small Welsh child, this is him, and I usually have Welsh children write my questions for me. The Welsh for microwave is pop-de-ping. Can you think of any more kitchen appliances that would have an amusing translation? It's quite a hard question.
That is a question. Currently,
yeah,
it would be my dishwasher, which I call the fucker. Anyway,
yeah.
Same old, you know what I mean, later. Have you ever known it not with your dishwasher? Beep, beep, beep. What's wrong this time?
They do beep a lot. Apparently you can turn that beep off if you're clever.
But it's got a stop on it.
Yeah.
It won't go any further. Beep, turn the beep off.
Yeah.
It's just watching you saying, yeah, whatever.
I do have a dishwasher-based emergency question. It's a new one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that works out quite well. It's like we almost like we scripted this. The other day, my mother-in-law put a quite sharp knife up, point upwards, in the dishwasher, and I never do that. I don't put them in the dishwasher.
Yeah.
But I kind of caught nearly. I nearly killed myself. You know, I nearly just cut my wrists on that. Do you have any feelings about cutlery in how cutlery should be placed?
Well, I do. I do, Richard.
Yeah.
Do you know on the top? The top.
Yeah.
Drawer.
Yeah.
There's the little flaps at the side.
Yeah.
I lay them.
Oh,
blade towards the
so
back.
So that's just the sharp knives or all knives.
Just the sharp fellas.
With your regular cutlery that isn't so sharp.
Yeah.
Do you put the knives all in the same compartment or the spoons all in the same compartment? Or
no,
you mix
it up? I'm willy nilly mixing it together. But I put the metal end up.
Yeah. Because otherwise, when you take them out, you've got your handprints all over the pointy end.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. That is the correct answer. There is, you can buy. So, well, I've written a newspaper article about this question. It's one of the most controversial newspaper columns I wrote. So I thought we'd bring it into the. A lot of people got involved. You can now buy a special tray that you can put into the top that is sideways on, and you can put all your cutlery in sideways and put that in the top. Would you be interested in having one of those?
I wouldn't be interested in. No, I think there's adequate nooks and crannies for all your needs.
But I think the problem with that is it takes up a lot of space.
Do you believe in Calgon? Do you really think something's fucking about with your washing machine that Calgon's going to get on top of?
I've never had an issue with limescale in my dishwasher, I don't think.
They just go on and on, don't they? The drum will break or the belt.
Yeah.
But I've never had someone come round and say you've got that central mid failure due to some build-up that Calgon would have sorted if they hadn't been.
I always think when I see that the cost of buying the Calgons over the lifetime of the machine would add up to more than the cost of a new machine.
Yeah, I agree, by the
time you get to it. So I always think that is unless you care about the earth and don't want to use up too many washing machines.
But your ship, but
what break it?
Calgon.
Yeah.
If it's so fucking powerful in it, right? Do you really want to be spewing Calgon out into the world?
That's true. And in your clothes and your dishes.
Imagine if you did. If Calgon penetrated every bit of machinery and equipment, it would all work perfectly forever. And then everyone would, everything would go bust, wouldn't it? You know, like the white soap thing, the Peter Sellers film.
Yeah, it could. And if it got into the water base, into the land, all lime would be destroyed.
A world without lime.
There'd be no chalk or anything. All of that stuff gets all the same, doesn't it?
Shit,
lime
man.
Scale, chalk.
Well, lime is, you're looking at plastering that whole industry.
The Mendips.
Yeah?
The Mendips.
Body disposal. Fucking Carl John.
When I first moved to Cheddar, there was a shed at the back of the garden, which was where the Thrilling Three used to meet up, for people who remember that reference. But there was a big thing of lime there that I became, like a big tray of lime underneath the workbench that I became quite obsessed with, and I dug it all out looking to see what had been in there. Yeah. And there was a lace lady's glove in there. Which, you know, I didn't know at the time that lime could be used to dispose of bodies, but finding like a lace lady's glove inside some lime does suggest that was the murder scene somewhere. Never mentioned it until now, probably should have brought it.
Have you ever thought about body disposal? Just like I said, just having a laugh, thinking about how you get rid of the wife. You know?
Yeah, I do think about things like this a lot. I don't know how, you know, I think you can probably chop them up and put them in the bins.
Just lob it in the bin.
Well, either bit by bit. You've got to decide, should I take the big punt and put it in one and hope that just gets in the back? Or shall I do it like bit by bit?
Yeah.
It's going to take 3 or 4 different weeks. I'm going to have most of the dead body of my wife, say, in the house.
It wouldn't need to be your wife, but yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't need to be my wife. Just say it is my wife. I like my wife. But I think, you know, you could probably get, if you put like a hand in there, in amongst your regular rubbish.
I mean, if it was your wife, I don't know it wouldn't be your wife.
No.
But if it was your wife, if you were to not have a frenzied attack, they'd immediately think it was a stranger attack.
Yeah.
So as long as you were up to doing one of those appeals, you know, please come home. Everybody misses you.
Don't you think they only do those appeals if they think the person did it?
You get that feeling, don't you?
You do. I think they make you do it. So if you're ever in that situation, and I hope you're not, Bob. And I really hope you're not. I hope, you know, no one close to you dies, but also I hope you don't become a suspect in the crime.
Thank you, Richard.
But if you are and they say, will you do an appeal, just say, no, I won't do it, because that is them watching you like a hawk. Yeah. They're watching you.
It's the greatest hindsight TV you can get, in it.
Yeah.
When you subsequently find out they did it and they show it, and it's so obvious that there's no tears.
It would be hard. I think even if you're a brilliant actor, that would be a hard role to go, right, I've got to play the part of someone who didn't kill this person. And also, you know, look upset.
Yeah.
No, I'm not upset, I'm glad I've killed them, I'm glad they're dead. Yeah. If you had to commit a terrorist atrocity, what, have you got any ideas for that? Because I plan terrorist atrocities a lot.
Well, I certainly wouldn't attack the capital.
No.
I've always thought that's a weakness with all the security. Yeah. I'd probably do somewhere like a Bradford or a Rotherham or Manchester, because the security is so much less. And I would use a sporting event or a shopping centre. No, every time I would. And I think terrorists don't use it. It's something that I remember vividly from the coverage of Vietnam when I was young. You know the napalm, the petroleum jelly?
Yeah.
Stuff. I'm just saying. It's hypothetical.
How would you distribute the napalm? Because that's quite hard. It's quite a tricky substance to...
Do you have a shop called Smithies where you live?
No. Well, it's like a joke shop.
Yeah, and they sell these guns. Or the super squirters.
Do you think napalm would be all right in such a... Wouldn't the napalm melt the super squirter?
No, absolutely not. No more than petrol would do.
Okay. No. See, would the petrol melt the super squirter? You've done quite a lot of research. Yes.
If you were to put polystyrene pellets in it as well, of course it would stick to people.
Right.
More.
It's true, you know, it's pretty easy to... I don't want to have a go at the terrorists, but it's pretty easy to kill quite a lot of people quite easily, quickly. And most terrorist atrocities... I mean, 9-11, I'll give them that was a good one. They got a lot of people. I mean, from their point, I'm disapproving of what they did. Was wrong, but if you are coming from the point of view of I'm a terrorist, I want to kill as many people as possible, that was a good day for the terrorists. But all the others have been, you know, you could do work worse with a, you know, pointed stick, couldn't you?
No, honestly, say someone like Spennymoor in County Durham, right, on the dog track of a Wednesday or something, they've got one turnstile, you could take everyone out, it's probably 250 Spennymoor residents. It would cripple. Spennymoor would be fucked. It would lose a whole generation. And think of the odourless greyhounds as well, wandering the streets. Not even out of the traps. Still, if you know that, if you laugh about it, that's the best way.
Gonna laugh, but, and also I hope, you know, that I give a lot of tips to terrorists in this, but I'm hoping that also the security services are listening and thinking, oh, we better watch out for if Bob Marley goes and buys a lot of super soakers and polystyrene pellets, we'll keep an eye on him. So, you know, we're giving it, it's a level playing field. At the moment, it's mainly terrorists listening in. I think, like on a plane, I think I said this on the last one, this, the bonus one, take some Baroccas, but they're made of, like, whatever that stuff is that they put in the Oasis drink. Yeah. And put that and just then get add water to that, and then you've got your explosives, then bang, blow up them. With a Barocca.
That would blow a plane.
Well, you know, they, you're not allowed to take Oasis on the plane, the, not the band, the drink. Because you can mix it. Not actual Oasis, like they put like chemicals in. The reason you can't take more than, you know, 100 millilitres on, because they had that plan, they were going to take Oasis bottles with coloured liquid in them, and then if you put the coloured liquid together, it creates a bomb big enough to blow a bit out of a plane.
Right.
But surely you could just make that Oasis chemical into a Barocca that looks like a Barocca, put a few of those in a Barocca, so you could take on loads, and then they've got water on the plane, you just put the water into the...
Yeah, and I don't know if you've ever handled, what is it, Semtex?
No.
If you've never handled it, I fucking challenge you to distinguish it from the exterior of a fig roll. No fucking chance. So, a little bit of fig paste in the middle of it. I'll tell you, man.
But that's why they make you.
You don't need to take over a plane.
But you can blow a hole in it. Or, like, because I've got a baby now, you just have a baby bottle full of the Oasis stuff, and they make you drink it.
Yeah.
But just have a little secret compartment at the top with milk in it that you drink, and then the rest is the bottom. Bang, blow up. So I'm just trying to help the terrorists out. You know, I feel sorry they haven't done so well recently. So, you know, good luck. Good luck to them. You're going to go on tour?
Yeah.
In the autumn?
Yeah.
Everyone's going on tour now.
This autumn, everyone's going.
It did. Well, last autumn there was 120 comedians on tour, so I think, you know, it edges the little guy like me out. but how many dates are you doing?
Well, we're doing 20 odd or something in November, and then we're doing some more the following year in the February.
Cool.
If we can make it, if we can still do it.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, 20 years since we've been on the stage.
Did you tour much back in the 90s?
Yeah, we used to do every couple of years we'd tour. Yeah.
You'll enjoy it. It's all right. No, it's fun, touring, but it's not as fun as it was. We were never too rock and roll on our tours.
We used to take guns and everything.
Did you?
No, I promise you, we used to take a gun. And...
What did you do with the gun?
We used to go somewhere where no one could see us. So we've got a gun and film each other with it.
Are you going to have a big tour bus, or are you going to just be in the...
No, we're just... Jim's got... He's going in a... what's it called? Caravelle? Volkswagen Caravelle?
Okay.
And he's just sleeping at the gigs. It's his intention. And I like to go Holiday Inn. I like Holiday Inn, but...
Holiday Inn is, that's a good level.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting. I think Premier Inn, Holiday Inn is about the right level.
I wouldn't go down to a Travelodge.
No. I mean, you really shouldn't. I've told the story on this before, but the last time I was in a Travelodge, and I'd never stay in a Travelodge again, there was someone else's bogey on my shower curtain when I went. And then, I couldn't be bothered to complain about it, but then just when I had a shower, I had to kind of push the... And then I was sitting down in the bar thinking there's a bogey in my room. Yeah. Someone else's bogey in my room.
Yeah. I mean, I was a bad lad in the time, and I always used to urinate in me kettle in the in the hotel. But oh, that's what I did. Because I couldn't be bothered to go to the toilet.
It's not that far to the toilet, though, is it? So you were like, essentially as a bedpan, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
You just hold it in the bed and wee in it.
Yeah.
Then put it by the side.
Usually because I'm reading the book.
Yeah.
But it was the same tour, the same time bottom were touring.
Yeah.
And nearly all the rooms that me and Vic got were Aid and Rick were getting.
Right.
The night after. I never apologised. Jennifer Saunders approached me about it.
Yeah.
She's all right about it.
It's good for you, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're drinking other people's weed.
Did you ever do Just for Laughs in Canada?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you find that it was just laughs?
I didn't like it. I didn't like it. I've been three times, I think. Me and Stu did it in the 90s, and I've been once on my own, and I found it. But I'm terrible in those situations, which is why, you know, I just have to do my own TV shows in a theatre being filmed by some men who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Did you and Stuart bomb there? Or
no, we did all right, but I just didn't like the whole atmosphere of it. So it's so about... It's such a trade fair, much more than, say, Edinburgh is. It's like, literally, you go back to the hotel and all the agents and all the TV people, and they're all trying to sign people up to it. And I was never interested in it. They were interested in taking Stu, you know, Stu went the second... I didn't want to go the second time we went, but Stu had loads of interest from, like, American producers and stuff about writing or being on TV in America. And I only wanted to be on TV in England or Britain. And so I really reluctantly went back. It's the only time Stu ever really wrote all the scripts because I didn't want to.
Yeah, it's awful. We absolutely bombed.
Yeah,
absolutely bombed. We sang a song called Jim came on and said he got a lucky charm or something.
Right.
I said, "Really? Well, that sounds like that's terrific news, Vic. That you've got something that brings you luck." And he said, yeah. And I said, what is it? And he said, it's like a carpet. And he had a 30-foot roll of carpet. And he sang to this Canadian audience that this is me lucky carpet. I bought it in the market. And there were that you could almost feel, so it's a fucking carpet. That can't be lucky. How do you carry that around with you all of that? Oh, we bombed. We walked off. I'd never seen Jack D and Eddie Izzard happier in London. Fucking Eddie was beaming.
But also, it's so slick there. So there's a lot. All the stand-ups and all the American stand-ups especially were really just trying to get on the sitcoms. So they were actors who had learned a 5-minute routine to the point of every. So like they would, if you watch them two nights in a row, it was exactly the same. They would get onto a stool at one point, step off. A guy was doing a joke. This is my abiding memory. It made a mistake halfway through the joke. Said, "Oh, excuse me," and started the joke again. Right, so like, and any stand-up would go, "Oh, I fucked that up," and either try and get out of it or make a joke about it. He was like, "Oh, excuse me," and then, you know, took two or three steps back so he was in the right place, and then just started telling the joke again as if nothing had happened.
Yeah.
And so they were like actors rather than...
No, it's really joyless, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lesson to learn, seeing comedy done like fucking, like really properly.
Yeah.
But for me and Jim, like, it is incredible, isn't it? The craft of some of those American ones. But it left us.
But that's the weird, you know. It's such a weird thing, isn't it? Where like an act in one place, everyone gets it, and it's either a local thing or it is that complicity with the audience. The audience have to be on side with you, and so you can be the funniest person in one place, and then you go somewhere else, and then just going, "This is just a man with a carpet. That's not. it's not amusing. I pass a carpet shop every day, and there's a man with lots of carpet.
Well, yeah, and he doesn't. He's not doesn't seem that lucky. He's got a closing down sale." I mean, Harry and Paul bombed that year as well, and that was an odd one because they did Smashy and Nicey, which was a well-honed thing.
Yeah.
And there was a Canadian-American audience just watching it saying, "They're just two DJs."
Yeah.
we're doing it for charity. Yeah, what's the joke here? No, it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hot. I hate it out there, but I'll give it another go. If I can be the funny butler in some sitcom in America, that's all I want now. Well, I think we might have to stop in a sec because we've got to do another one. It's been really nice though. But don't know. We don't have to. We don't have. I might ask you one more.
I enjoy talking about the washing machine, the dishwasher, and the terrorism best.
Yeah, they were some of my high points. It all goes out though. That's the thing with this. There's nothing gets edited out unless you feel embarrassed by anything you've said that was litigious. Wouldn't you just go on about Avalon for 15 minutes? That's it. But they.
Have you got a grudge?
No. It was a very in joke for five people in this room, probably. But
have you got a grudge, Richard?
No, I'm with Avalon. I'm still with Avalon.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Let's not do this again.
You're with Avalon?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, fuck. Yeah.
Man and boy. I'm a very loyal person.
You happy with her, man?
I'm happy.
Are you happy with her? This?
Well, I think I'm as happy as I would be anywhere else.
My agent's 10%.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
I'd take 10% of you over 15% of me. Run your own production company.
But do they treat you differently
to everyone else?
Yeah.
I've not gotten that much of a problem. They've been good to me, I think, and they let me do this. We're probably going to cut this out again.
Sorry.
I wish I'd never brought it up. We'll talk about it backstage.
I mean, I don't mind you saying you're a terrorist. Yeah. You're with Avalon. it beggars belief.
If you had to choose between having a tit that dispensed talcum powder,
a tit, yes,
or a finger that could travel through time,
yeah.
Which would you choose out of those two things?
Tit that dispenses,
yeah, talcum powder. You got that much talcum powder as you want, infinite supply of talcum powder.
Full infinite.
Or a finger that can trap, but only your finger can travel through time, but it can go anywhere you want it to go.
And does it return?
Yeah, well, you're still controlling it. It's there, but it's just in touch, like there. It's gone through the vortex.
And I touch things in the future.
Yeah, or the past. Yeah, the future or the past. Did you change the past with your finger?
I'd like to touch the past. Thank you very much. Yes. I did that very much.
It's an easy...
Like strum on a lute or something. I'm quite enticed by that. And into the future, when finally we get fucking jetpacks, I'll be able to touch one of them.
You could turn someone's jetpack off. Right, I think we better go. But ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a massive round of applause to Bob Mortimer?
Thank you, everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
the podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.